You're listening to episode 48 of IDRA Class Notes.
What I hear from many educators is these students don't care, or parents do not participate. Parents also don't care. And this blaming of somebody else actually contributed to me making that particular statement that this is vested in schools and that it's schools that need to do some changes. It's schools that need to address this particular issue in many, many different ways. Rather, instead of blaming, look at solutions. What is it that we can do in order to address this particular issue?
Welcome to IDRA's Class Note Podcast. I'm Dr. Bradley Scott. As you know, this podcast series is one in which we explore issues facing education today and strategies for teachers and administrators to better serve all students. We'd love to hear from you and to hear your comments about this particular show. And there will be details at the end of the podcast on how you can contact us. By the way, if you like our show, and we certainly hope you do, please try to tell three others or leave a review for us on our iTunes. That helps others to find us. And we've set up an email alert to let you know when a new podcast episode of Class Notes is available. And if you're not subscribing to this podcast, our email alerts can help you to stay up to date. So just go to our website and be sure to sign up. By the way, don't forget to sign up for our free monthly Graduation for All electronic newsletter. And you can sign up for this newsletter at our website as well. And so I'm really excited about our topic for today. The topic is properly serving secondary English language learners. And even more than that, I'm delighted to have with us Dr. Abelardo Villarreal. We call him Lalo here at IDRA, and he is the director of IDRA Field Services. He holds a bachelor's degree in political science and business administration, a master's degree in education in Spanish, a master of education in educational administration, and a doctorate in curriculum and instruction. Lalo brings unparalleled expertise in program management, effective technical assistance delivery, curriculum development, and implementing and facilitating innovative models for school change. And of course, he's been a teacher from third grade through the university level, has served as an elementary school principal, and as a director for a district of secondary curriculum. He also has overseen compliance with law regulations with the Office for Civil Rights. He's done that and more. He has developed and validated a theoretical change model for school districts with educational strategies that are compatible with the needs of language minority children. He brings a great deal of expertise, and whenever you want the definitive answer and response to how to best serve English language learners, it's Lalo that we turn to. Lalo, I can't thank you enough for being here today and spending a few moments talking to me and to us about this very, very important conversation. I should let our listeners know that at our local level, we are concerned about providing assistance to school districts across Region 6, and particularly in Texas, as a result of what has happened in the LULAC GI form versus the state of Texas ruling that was handed down by Chief Justice. His concern and his comments in that particular circuit court decision was that we have failed to properly serve secondary English language learners, and hence we continue to see high dropout rates among them, poor service being provided to them at the secondary level, and that school districts must take a greater responsibility in terms of serving this population of students. But Lalo, please don't let me do all of the talking. I want you to begin to share with us some of our insights, some of your insights around this important issue. And let me first of all say hello to you.
Hello, Bradley. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well today, and I sure want to thank you for being here. Lalo, let me just start off with this general question. We have for a long time been focused on the issues of children learners whose first language is not English. I mean, it goes back at least to the Lyle decision in the early 1970s. Where are we still failing to get it right with this population of students in our American school systems as you see it? I know we've been doing a lot at the elementary level, but now we have this real concern about what's happening with kids at the secondary level, English language learners at the secondary level. Where are we failing to turn the corner?
Well, Bradley, obviously we have made some progress in terms of addressing the needs of English language learners. And I would say that this happens more at the elementary level. We see through achievement scores that we get that, for example, children at the third grade level where bilingual education is in full force, English language learners are doing well.
Reasonably well.
But that doesn't seem to be the case as they continue going up the grades. That by the time they get to middle school, we start seeing that there is a decline. And we start seeing the achievement gap that is existing between English language learners and non-English language learners. This is of deep concern for us educators and something that schools need to reflect on. As you mentioned earlier, the recent case by Judge Justice validated all the reasons that we've had in terms of how do we address this issue now. We need to do something now. And we cannot wait any longer. So many of our students have left school prematurely. Many of our students do not have the opportunity to go to college because they are not prepared.
Sure.
Academically to continue their education at the university level. Of course, this pervasive underachievement is not getting less, it's growing, so this is of great concern. So these are some of the issues that we have right now.
Mm-hmm. Lalo, I'm wondering, and I should let our listeners know that also you have two great articles, one in our January newsletter issue and one in a follow-up or a part two in the February issue of the IDRA newsletter. But one of the comments that you make is that the fact is that failure to address educational needs of English language learners is vested in schools. Thus, it is schools that must, by omission or commission, have greatly contributed to the educational mediocrity for this population of students at the secondary level. Would you help us understand better what you meant by the failure to address educational needs of English language learners is vested in the public schools, given that there are many other factors out in the community, the homes from which kids come from, research says, maybe factors. Why is it vested in the public schools?
Well, it's vested in schools, and I say that, Bradley, because what I hear from many educators is, first of all, these students don't care, okay? Or the reason that they give for the failure of educating English language learners is that parents do not participate. Parents also don't care. And this blaming of somebody else actually contributed to me making that particular statement that this is vested in schools. And that it's schools that need to do some changes. It's schools that need to address this particular issue in many, many different ways. Rather, instead of blaming, look at solutions. What is it that we can do in order to address this particular issue?
So that makes a lot of sense. It seems then that if you spend your time coming from a deficit place, a deficient place, there's something wrong with the kids, there's something wrong with the parents,
right.
There's something wrong with the homes, then it almost excuses you from being able to even respond to the child who actually shows up at the front door to the school and raise the question, what can I do to help him or her?
That is correct, Bradley, and we hear that a lot. And more so as the time comes when it's accountability time, you know that people need to respond like after we have testing going on and we start getting results and the results don't show the achievement that we want in terms of English language learners. This becomes a big issue, and the blaming game starts. Mm. And what I'm saying in this particular article is that schools really need to look at what they're doing and how they're doing. So things and services that they provide so that we can address the issue at the root of a problem and proceed from there.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense to me. We've alluded to your article, and let me just simply say that I found it to be packed with a lot of things that I think are worth reflection, comment, and action that are quite important. I did want to just highlight, you talk about 10 principles for the education of secondary English language learners. And there are a couple of them I want to highlight because these principles don't necessarily seem to come up in the conversation when we talk about properly serving English language learners. So, for instance, we typically talk about all students needing high-quality curriculum, powerful curriculum. We at least in theory, talk about having high quality teaching being a prerequisite for helping students to be successful. And of course, that deserves some conversation on its own, and I'll raise a question about that later. But there are a couple of them I do want to highlight. One of them is that you talk about the important role that school boards play. It's principle number two for you, and how they must support and assign the education of English language learners as a high priority. That almost suggests as though that has not been happening.
That is correct, Bradley. I don't believe it is happening, and I don't see any of the literature saying that it is happening. Mm-hmm. So a school, just like in any other organization, the people who are part of that organization look for signals from the leadership as to how to proceed. And if they are not receiving the signals from the leadership, in this case the school board or the administration, that the education of English language learners is a priority, then if I am a teacher, obviously my attention to that probably will be shaded by the lack of commitment from the leadership.
And the messages you might pick up from the leadership verbally, non-verbally, by suggestion, etc.
Right. And sometimes the messages that they get are basically what I discussed earlier, that this is an issue of the home, and the home is doesn't care what happens, so consequently, why should schools care? Mm-hmm. And so this is a very basic element in school administration that needs to be addressed, and it is not addressed. And by this, I'm saying that from the school board, there needs to be policy that talks about the education of English language learners as a priority in this district and as an expectation for the schools to meet. When I talk about schools, all the way from school administration to teacher and anybody who participates in providing services to English language learners.
Makes a lot of sense. Now, you opened a door for me to ask this question, and we had talked about this deficit approach to English language learners, but your principle number three talks about ensuring that the assessment of language proficiency of students, particularly in the core content areas, that there is a powerful way of identifying students for participation in exiting from English language learners, and it must be based upon good assessment so that they can, in fact, I would imagine, move appropriately into the regular educational program. Where are we failing with assessment to find out how kids are doing who are labeled as English language learners?
Right.
What information are we not getting?
Well, first of all, Bradley, I think we must understand that English language learners, or when we talk about English language learners, we're talking about not a student with a definite set of experiences. We're talking about students who actually come into school with from a foreign country, as an example. Mm-hmm. That's one set of students that comes in. And within this set of students, there might be some students that come in with an education, with formal education,
in their
just not knowing the English language.
Sure.
Or they can come in with into this country with limited proficiency in English or no proficiency in English and no formal education. Now, that obviously, that has different challenges
for a
teacher. And then, of course, we have the bulk of English language learners in this country that is made up of students who have traditionally been neglected, that who actually have a home language that is other than English, that is not English, or their first language was not English. Mm-hmm. So consequently, they go into school, they were neglected, and they stayed behind, and now they're at the high school level, and they're way behind. So obviously we will have a range of needs that need to be addressed.
And you obviously then need a range of assessments.
Assessments,
right. To see what those actual needs and skills, competencies they have or don't have at that secondary level, right, in order to make real decisions.
Right.
About
let me give you an example. We will have some students that have already taken, let's say, algebra and world history in their country of origin. And they come into this country, and obviously they already have this knowledge. Do we have the instruments to assess that?
Yes.
To see whether they have that knowledge? Because there will be probably no need to retake that particular course in this country. They're already ready. What they need is to only learn the English language.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And, of course, definitely the assessment of English language is very, very important for a teacher. because we need to know if the student is a beginner, as an example, or doesn't have any proficiency in the English language, or is already at the intermediate level.
Sure, sure.
You know, and because the approach that you will use is going to be different.
Really interesting, Lalo. Let me get you to talk about two other principles really quickly. I know our time is just flying, but one of them talks about, and this is principle number five, about an environment for English language learners that is characterized by acceptance and valuing, respect, support, safety, and security. Talk to us about this notion of valuing this population of students, and it's not monolithic, as you're suggesting, it is diverse, but as opposed to thinking about them from a deficit point of view, a valuing point of view.
Okay, first of all, Bradley, let's think about English language learners and that they, when they come into the secondary schools, they're in the midst of developmental, you know, sociocultural and institutional transitions.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
And by developmental, I mean that they're in this adolescent stage.
Yeah, they're growing.
You know, right. And it's with very drastic changes that they have to deal with, as well as developmental in the sense of English language proficiency. Mm-hmm. So they need to develop the this English language proficiency. In some cases, even cognitively. Mm-hmm. I mean, if they have never had a formal education, obviously we have to address that particular issue. The other one is that they're moving into a new culture. In some instances, they're moving into a new culture, and I'm talking about students, English language learners who are come from another country.
Sure.
Or other times living within a mainstream culture that fails to accept them, many times denigrating them. And these are pressures that students have to go through and have to deal with in schools. Or in institutional transitions, I talk about because they're moving from eighth grade to a new environment.
Absolutely.
And that obviously has additional pressures that need to be addressed. And they come into school, and then we have an environment that is characterized by low expectations. Okay, you talk about valuing. So obviously, if we have low expectations, we're not valuing what the student brings. We're already from a perspective of a deficit model mm-hmm. in here by showing low expectations. Consequently, what we do is, in many instances, we kind of water down the curriculum, which is not what needs to happen.
Absolutely.
Or we place these students with teachers who are not certified, which is already indicating to us that the school does not see the future of these kids in a very positive manner. Mm-hmm. They already know, and they have already decided their future, because it's obviously not going to college or anything.
So they're not worth the investment?
It's not worth the investment, mm-hmm. unfortunately.
Sure.
And they even, you know, don't even have the commitment to see them graduate. And I think that is sad.
Absolutely.
In fact, in the minds of many people is they're going to be here only a couple of years and they're going to leave. So the valuing and seeing students from a different perspective mm-hmm. of they are valuable, they have potential, they have something to contribute.
And that they are worth investing.
And they're worth investment.
Are best in. Mm-hmm.
I see it as a potential pool, mm-hmm. you know, that needs to be tapped. And we have to keep in mind that this is a population that is growing and obviously is going to have an impact in our later lives.
Absolutely. Lalo, our time is really running, but I must ask you, how is it that we are not still yet preparing teachers in issues like first and second language acquisition as a part of their the regular run of their educational preparation? We core content teachers are not being prepared in first and second language acquisition issues or ESL strategies in the classroom. Why is that still occurring in 2009?
Well, I think why is it occurring? I think there are a number of reasons. One, obviously, the English language learners are in with all teachers, mm-hmm. period, in
Absolutely.
All different classes.
Absolutely.
So consequently, math teachers, they are in all math classes, they're in science classes, they're in English language arts classes, and so on and so forth. What these teachers need is actually some preparation in terms of how do I adjust my instruction to ensure that students who come in with a different language proficiency level can participate meaningfully in my
sure,
classroom.
Sure, sure.
So that type of training, and I must say that you see more districts now engaging content area teachers in some training that addresses, in this case, sheltered instruction. Mm-hmm. which is adjusting the instruction to make sure that there is comprehensible input and that the English language learners are participating with all other students in that particular classroom, that they're giving the challenging curriculum that they need to have, that you don't need to be totally proficient in English to participate in a challenging curriculum.
Absolutely.
And to actually answer high-level order questions. That can be accomplished, you know, if teachers just know how to adjust and modify the instruction.
It seems to me also that at the institutions of higher education level, in our teacher preparation courses, it needs to be one of those required courses, a series of courses around first and second language acquisition and bilingual education. It seems like all teachers in this day and age need to have that as a natural part of their teacher preparation.
That would be ideal, mm-hmm. Bradley, and I see some schools going or some universities going that route. In fact, I feel very encouraged by a university in the area that I know that is now asking all elementary teachers to actually come up with an ESL certification.
That makes sense to me.
Which I think is a big step forward. I think most some universities are now addressing the issue of at least one or two ESL classes. But again, that brings another issue. It's like, what will the ESL classes include?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And obviously that's something that needs to be addressed by universities also. And what do we mean by sheltered instruction and how is that addressed in college preparation program? And also we need to state that in situations like here in San Antonio or in Texas, I think all teachers should have some courses in second language acquisition because of the numbers that we're talking about.
That they find it in all classrooms?
In all classrooms.
Absolutely. Lalo, I feel like I've done you such a disservice. There's so much we could talk about, but we're absolutely out of time. Absolutely out of time. I'm really hoping our listeners will not only go to our website and read both of your article, parts 1 and 2 in our IDRA newsletter, but also visit our IDRA Plus and see some of the supports we have around this very important and I think extremely timely topic of how do we properly serve English language learners at the secondary level. It's an issue, of course, that we are confronted with in Texas and that we need to be doing more around, but I have personally understand because of the work that I do that across our nation, this is an issue that we need to be doing a better job with. So I can't thank you enough for you having taken time out of your busy day to be here, and I want to invite you to be sure to come back. I always appreciate your sharing your insights because you have so much to offer. Thank you, Lalo, for being here.
Thank you very much, Brad.
And I want to thank our listeners for taking time out to join us on this podcast. Don't forget to visit our website here at IDRA, not only to give us feedback on your reaction to this particular podcast and the others that you can access on our website. Be sure to leave a review with us on iTunes. Be sure to share this particular podcast and others with 2, 3, 5, 10, 20 friends, because we think that teachers and administrators and all education stakeholders can benefit from it. Don't forget to sign up for our free monthly Graduation for All electronic newsletter, and just be sure to stay in touch with us. Let us know how we are doing in terms of helping you to better serve all students, no matter where they are in our nation's public schools. Be sure to take care of yourself and remember that IDRA has a small mission in word, and that is to ensure that schools work for all learners, but it's a big challenge for us all. Take care of yourselves until we see you again. This is Dr. Bradley Scott signing off.
Thank you for listening to IDRA Class Notes. For more information on IDRA and other Class Notes topics, go to www.idra.org. You can also send us your thoughts by email to podcast@idra.org or fill out the form on our podcast webpage at www.idra.org/podcasts.